This episode is brought to you by the all-new EM360 and the General Board of Higher Education and Ministry. EM360 is a system for enhancing the effectiveness of individual and collective leadership within the UMC. For more information on EM360, visit gbhem.org/EM360.
My wife is a professor at a small college, and her department had held an outdoor pool party this last weekend for the professors and their families. It was the first time in 15 months that the four professors had all been together in person, something that had been a weekly, if not sometimes daily, occurrence, and it was amazing. I get a similar experience almost every weekend as the pastor at our church, seeing new batches of folks return to in-person worship for the first time. Certainly, one of the things we've learned this last year is the power and potential in digital ministry. It's something we must continue to learn, lean into, invest in, and practice, as it allows us to make disciples and be present in the lives of people we may never have reached any other way. However, in our last couple episodes, we've been exploring non-digital options to jumpstart that area of our creativity and planning again. On our next two episodes of the MyCom Church Marketing Podcast, we bring this mini-series full circle by talking to a couple who believe deeply in the power of the tangible. This month, we focus on in-person events, and next month, we explore the use of artifacts. Thank you to everybody for listening. My name is Dan Wunderlich. I'm a United Methodist pastor, and our guests today are Hillary and Jason DeMayo. They are husband and wife, parents to an adorable daughter, and the co-founders of We Are Curio, a design thinking firm. Jason is also a painter and visual artist. Hillary and Jason, thank you so much for being with us today.
Awesome, Dan. Thanks for having us. We're glad to be here.
Well, I had the pleasure and privilege of getting to know and work with you both through the Florida Conference of the United Methodist Church. But before we get into your Methodist connection, can you tell us a little bit about yourselves, about We Are Curio, and how you all ended up doing the work that you do?
Yeah, totally. You want me to lead it off?
Yeah, go for it.
All right. Well, about 6 years ago, I was actually maybe 7 years ago, I was a pastor. I was doing like spiritual formation and did that for about 5 years. And during that process, kind of fell in love with architecture, art, design, all of that, and stumbled across this idea of design thinking. And I was just like, man, this just really makes sense to me. I never was really like into, you know, like I want to be a leader, leadership culture, but I was like, okay, this makes sense. Creative problem solving. This is a way that I could maybe help others be more creative, help, you know, people solve problems. So I got kind of certified in design thinking, and just read literally everything on it possible.
Yeah.
And I just pretty much was just like, I think it's time. I talked with the pastors, elders, and they, you know, commissioned me to do it. And, they said, this is great. So I started it, and, you know, I don't even know what, 6 months later, 3 months later, Hillary?
Yeah.
Hillary quit her job and came on board a little bit unexpectedly, in the sense that we wanted her to come on board after a few years, but we're like, okay, maybe you keep a job for a little bit so we can have money. And then, but Hillary had a little bit of a different plan. So I'll let you add anything that you want there.
Yeah. But when you also see opportunity and also when the spirit moves, you really just have to jump on those really feelings and inclinations. And so I just felt like it was the right time. It's really never the perfect time to create a business for both of you. And so we decided, and I honestly, I've always been a problem solver and I've always been a creative, and I didn't know design thinking was out there. So it was kind of like my world completely was synthesized when Jason like shared what design thinking was. And I was like, wait, this is a thing. I have a master's in org leadership. And I was like, wait, I already intuitively do this. Yeah. I love this. So he was just kind of like, oh, okay. So yeah, we really have stepped into helping people really solve problems and expand what's possible for their organizations or for their ideas or for them as individuals. And so it's taken, you know, different twists along the path the last 6 years, but So if anything, 2020 has really helped us solidify what it is that we do. And so we really focus in on strategy and environments and artifacts. And we've done different pieces of that along the past 5 years, but really knowing that with strategy, we're advising and consulting people, environments, we're creating spaces where we're training and really helping our design thinking process come to life. And our newest endeavor, which we can talk about, but iRocks, it's our human-centered stay that we're building in Asheville. And then Artifacts is really creative. Jason's really spot with J-Space and art, and you can talk about that more too. So if anything, I feel like the 6 years, we didn't maybe necessarily start with this grand business plan, but now 6 years in, we know our three lanes, we're passionate about them, and it's really at a life-giving place for us.
Yeah, we prototyped our way forward.
Yeah, we really did. Honestly, we prototyped, we saw what we loved and what made sense with other people, and now that's where we're at.
Well, and the awesome part is like the core of what you do, even though you were still working it out at the time that I had experience with you all, it was very clearly your passion and heading in this direction that made me think of you all when we wanted to come up with some topics about non-digital things. But real quickly, let's just go ahead for our audience out there, because you know you've done work with us. We United Methodists like to know you've got the UMC bona fide. So why don't you share just a bit about the kinds of things you've done with me and my colleagues here in Florida and across the U.S.
Yeah, we got quite the resume now.
Yeah, with Methodist.
We honestly started, I had just started the business. I was doing like little design thinking workshops and got in touch with Dan Jackson. Some of you may know Dan, just an amazing dude. And he was like, hey, will you teach some pastors design thinking, creative thinking? And I was like, absolutely. So we started there. I think we did a good job with that. And then Dan was like, introduced us to Alex Shanks, Bishop Carter, and we got to sit down with them and just literally in the studio, just dream for a while. And it was awesome. We just have the greatest amount of respect for those guys. And out of that, we started, I think the first project was it POV or was MLAB first?
I think they were kind of simultaneous.
Yeah,
simultaneous. MLAB was probably the first cross conference work that we did in jurisdiction.
Yeah. So we've done, just to kind of list it off, MLAB's been a huge thing, mm-hmm. which is really an innovation movement for leaders in the church that kind of is connectional in nature in the sense that it's Florida, Georgia, Tennessee, North Carolina now. Uh-huh. And then the MLAB movement has inspired multiple other movements. The Launch movement, which is kind of mid of the U.S., mm-hmm. and Texas, and that whole crew.
That's in work with the Texas Methodist Foundation, and so that's evolved there.
Yep. And then we've got Innovate mm-hmm. In Indianapolis. And then we've done just like a ton of work with the FLUMC strategy, mission, mm-hmm. vision, values stuff. We did a thing called POV, which was really around trying to help people have empathy and good conversations around the topic of sexuality. So we've done a bunch of different interesting projects, mm-hmm. Have enjoyed it a lot, have learned a lot on the way. And just really feel like we've built a movement of innovation, mm-hmm. not just us, but like the people who are in it, moving innovation forward and spaces for people to dream in a new way and mm-hmm. try some new things. So we've loved working with you.
And really are continuing to do that work. We currently are working with different Methodist groups now and even into 2022. So we are really grateful we've been able to work with
New Mexico on Friday.
Yeah. So yeah, we've
made it across.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. Yes, we're almost across the U.S.
We got to go global next.
Yeah.
There you go. Well, since in-person events are generally the cornerstone of our experiences in the church, whether it's worship or small groups or fellowship, let's go there first. When we all shifted digital, there was a mix of excitement, possibilities, and church engagement actually did go up last spring from mid-March through Easter. But then it plummeted pretty quickly across the board. Even Barna, who does ecumenical research, noted just this absolute collapse of engagement with online church in it. And it feels like as the summer wore on, as the school year finished, digital fatigue set in. You know, we're all doing work online, school online for a period of time. Any and all family or social interactions were through screens. And for some of us, church became that expendable screen experience, that thing you could skip if you felt the fatigue or burnout. Like, you know, maybe you just listen to the sermon podcast later. But just speaking sort of physiologically, how our minds and bodies respond, why do you think there is such a burnout with screens and digital interactions that's different from this life-giving in-person experience that you all usually tap into?
Yeah, that's a really deep and great question. We were just on a call the other day with a United Methodist. I'm not sure what it was for, but we were in a cohort of talking about innovation.
Yeah, and digital discipleship.
Digital discipleship and the burnout and like, but also the possibilities of it. Mm-hmm. And there was a word that someone brought up, and I forget what philosopher said it, but it was like a French philosopher, this idea of collective effervescence. You sound really smart. You can just use this in a sentence. But it's this idea that when you get together, the energy of human beings, I mean, if you do even a little like metaphysical study about your body and how your energy goes beyond 6 feet, beyond yourself, getting in a room with people close enough for all of that energy to happen. I don't know the exact science to it, but I do think that there is something different that happens that gives your body, your life, your mind more energy from, I think, being together with people. Mm-hmm. So I think that there's that. You get together and you feel a different sense of connection. It's annoying to set things up and like, you know, your internet's going out and that kind of fatigues you a little bit. You're missing some of the cues and the, you know, just things that are just easier in person. So I think all of that is like, it's not that it's not effective. It's just like playing in the back of your mind and taking up real estate. So that kind of, I think it's just, you just get tired of it. You just kind of get tired of doing it. But to speak to the other side of it, I do feel like we did counseling, therapy, like through the pandemic, me and Hillary together. And we were on, you know, Zoom every time with our therapist. And I've actually, after going through this whole thing, I think there is a major value to intimacy of being over Zoom, a conversation where I'm in my own space. So I feel comfortable. I'm not in someone else's space. I'm in control of my space. And I don't know. I just think that there's something to that, that there was like a really good amount of intimacy there and in other spaces too. Like some of these cohorts we've done, we've created really intimate spaces. So I think in what you lose from the in-person tangible aspects, you'll never replace, but you can have a different sense of intimacy that I think is more maybe even two-way. There's a lot you can still do digitally that I think that we should be still rethinking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I think probably as I kind of reflect on it, certainly the size of the gathering, I think, matters and how much sort of investment you're required. Now, granted, I mean, an intense therapy session across screens and maybe life-giving, you're also going to be tired at the end of it, but you would be anyway in a therapy session. Right. But I know like if there's four or more people on the call, I know I can scroll my phone and kind of get away with it. You know, like you can mentally... Right. You know, check out. But once you check out, you lose that connection. You know, that maybe you kind of don't do that when you're in person. And so, you know, let me shift to because, you know, of course, the challenge is church, like even if it's like one on one, I know like for the first probably 6 months of the pandemic, it was literally me and my worship leader and my cell phone and my iPad. Those were the cameras, you know, like so it very much had a one on one feel, but it's still just it's a monologue, you know, it's a one way thing. People are watching. They're not really interacting. So when we think of bigger group experiences, and I know, Hillary, this is kind of your sweet spot in event planning. I got to take some of the design thinking experiences with you all, and you all were great about providing us these fun group exercises. One that people might know of, because there's a TED Talk about it, is the building the towers out of spaghetti and marshmallows. And that's just something that simply can't be recreated online. You can make your own tower. You know, you could still plan hands-on experiences. Our children's director was amazing. She created this thing called Take Home Church, where she would send home bags of snacks and supplies and things. And that's great. But the group experience, the group dynamic of building that tower with other people, just it can't be recreated online. Something happens mentally, creatively, and almost, as you said, the effervescence or the spirit, the energy in the room. So Hillary or Jason as well, what are some of the intangibles that you all think about when it comes to making an in-person experience worth it and overcome perhaps what we value in the efficiency of a digital gathering?
Yeah, really great question. I think what matters for me, one that is so important when you show up to an in-person experience, is that somebody has prepared and thought about you really in essence, like they've prepared a place at the table for you. And I think as people of faith, that is really what Jesus demonstrated so powerfully for us, was that there was a place created at the table and that we are welcome to come, and it was going to be a feast, and it was going to be just really, there was excess. And I think what happens, the different, like an in-person experience versus a digital, is when you're in a digital experience, there's a start and a finish. And I think as people who are creating, you know, really like spiritual moments, when the spirit leads, the Zoom call, you know, it's hard if you're timed and you're on a schedule. Yeah. And I also think if you're having a, you know, a beautiful conversation around a table in person, or you're, you know, the creativity's flowing, or, you know, somebody's crying and you need to sit and pray with them,
put
or
a hand on their shoulder. And like,
yeah, there is something so powerful about that human connection that happens in person, and that you can just stay in that flow, and both creative flow, spiritual flow, relational flow. And so I think that that is something that's very hard to replicate because you don't, and then you just have the time or space. I mean, sure, you could do a breakout room or say like, hey, you want to meet on the side virtually, but there is just something so powerful about saying, hey, let's go in the lobby and let's talk about that more. Or, hey, do you want to go to the prayer room? Or let's, you know, have these different moments. And so I think there's just something so powerful about, just that extra excess time and space that happens in person, and that we can be more in partnership with what the Spirit's doing in that physical space. Not that it can't happen digitally. We just have to train ourselves for maybe an awareness of that. And maybe that's just a muscle that's not had to be developed, but I don't think it's something that couldn't be. It's much just harder. An intentionality that really has to be cultivated, that I think many of us have maybe just had practice doing it in person. And I think that's what makes it so important.
Yeah. My just quick thing I'll add is that I'm always thinking about, like, for experiences in person, I'm thinking about the senses a lot, like what are people going to see, smell, taste, touch, all these different things, which digitally you don't have much option for. You have everyone get the same candle, or, you know, like I don't know what you would do, but it's very tough. And then also I'm thinking about really like emotions and how the movement of the experience will build and what emotions you want people to have there. So really trying to help people be more human, and digital does take away a sense of the humanity with us. Like right now it's like I'm auditory with you. I can't see your, you know, it's like there's things that would add to it, that physical being in person helps you be more incarnational maybe, or like alive to people. So yeah, I think it takes a lot of the human element out of it, and you have to just work hard to find that in the digital world.
We're going to pause for a brief message, but coming up after the break, we dig into what this means specifically for church marketing. Stick around.
I'm excited today to tell you more about EM360 from the General Board of Higher Education and Ministry. Local church pastors operate in dynamic environments, performing activities and duties for pastoral leadership requiring a wide range of skills and capabilities. I don't need to list them all here, but from administrative tasks to caregiving, from evangelism and fellowship to team building and training, clergy are being called to lead in new and diverse ways. EM360 is a strengths-focused growth program built upon industry-leading technologies to help clergy uncover new ways to lead their churches, engage with their communities, and ultimately better serve their ministry and mission. I know that local church leaders, district superintendents, and annual conferences are excited about this program. To learn more about the only official 360-degree feedback and leadership formation tool endorsed by the UMC, visit gbhem.org/EM360. And now, back to our program.
Well, and that's a really great bridge to where I want to go next. And that is, you know, this is, of course, a church marketing podcast. And maybe so far listeners are like, this is interesting, but how is this church marketing?
Right.
Well, you know, every church, if you're a brand new listener and you're like, maybe you're a fan of Hillary and Jason's work. And so you found them here and you're like, what is this podcast all about? For me and our team here, church marketing is primarily telling the story of the church. That's based off a Seth Godin quote about, if you told the truth about your business, would people want to work with you? That's the measure of marketing. So for me, church marketing is about telling the truth of your church in such a way that people want to connect with you. So anything is church marketing. Of course, a Facebook ad is church marketing, but so are in-person events. And the event itself is marketing because it tells the story of your church. And Hillary, I like what you said about, does it feel like they prepared for me? You know, like, it's one thing if you drop by a friend's house and they haven't picked up or anything. It's another thing if a friend invites you over for dinner and it's clear they put effort into hospitality. And you all, like, just even simple things. When I worked with you all around Florida Annual Conference, you know, a lot of us, especially the pastors out there, maybe even some of the church staff and volunteers, if you've ever been to Annual Conference, it is the annual meeting that a lot of us, you know, it's like good once it's done, but none of us are looking forward to, because it's just the annual meeting. You have to get a lot of work done. But you all made just like little tweaks to the environment that said, we are excited. This is a meeting of importance. Even little things like just the lighting in the lobby. And now granted, like some of these things cost money, but from your experience and your expertise, what are some little hints or hacks of easy, cost-effective, or really overlooked things that can elevate an in-person experience?
Goodness, there's so many that don't necessarily have to even cost a lot of money. It's honestly, the key is intentionality. And what I mean by that, it's intentionally thinking about the people that are going to be in the space, the physical environment that you want to happen. So what emotions do you want people to have? Is this upbeat? Is this fun? Or is this like, you know, it's serious and we want people to be focused and be responsible and really like plan something that's going to have matter and really have longevity. And it's thinking about the emotions you want them to have. And then what specific outcome do you want to happen when they leave? And so something really simple. And I mean, this is not necessarily like a marketing outward, but thinking about a staff meeting, one thing that I've been a part of lately, I got to go to this lady's house for dinner and she's just absolutely incredible. But one thing she did at both lunch and dinner is she had place cards with our names on them and intentionally placed us all around the table to sit by somebody different so that she knew that we would have interesting conversation and that we would make the connections that we needed. And what if you just like so simple at your next staff meeting or a board meeting, or if it was like a volunteer meeting and you just knew enough about who was going to be in the room and intentionally prepared the table and, you know, mixed up these 10 or 12 people so that, you know, I know that Steve and Susie both have the same passion about outreach. And if they could connect, wow, something so natural could come of this. And so it's those little things. I mean, that's one example. Another very simple thing we help clients do is really thinking about your experience or event materials that you can reuse. Mm-hmm. So you talk about lighting, like you can buy such inexpensive things that you're going to use time and time again. So you don't think about events as, sure, you might only have a few $100 for each event all year, but if you start thinking of your experience budget as a whole year budget and start building, you start purchasing items that can have big impact on a low budget, and you invest in things like really nice lights that you reuse, really nice.
We're talking about lights, like table, the puck lights we have.
Oh my gosh. What, yeah.
They were like $70 a pop, which I mean, is not nothing,
right?
But they create dynamic energy. Yes. And then we've used those for 5 years.
Yeah.
We've got eight of them, you know, or whatever totally. You invested.
And like some simple things is like buying cloth tablecloths that you might feel like, mm-hmm. oh, wow, you know, we're investing a couple hundred dollars up front. But every time, and just for the environment, you're not throwing away plastic every time. And so that's a big thing I help clients think about is creating your experience like bins, and you take good care of it, you have them and you reuse them and you mix and match them. And before you know it, you take an old church closet and you fill it with really great experience items, and you can turn a really basic luncheon into like, wow, someone prepared for me.
This is cool.
This is really nice. We just cut some fresh flowers off the property and put them in dollar store vases and use the linens that we already bought two events before. And wow, this feels really nice. Mm-hmm. So I think it's that intentionality.
Totally.
It's knowing the purpose, what emotions you want people to have, and what do you want them. I always think about this is when people leave my experiences, what do I want them to say? And I want them to say, wow, they thought of everything. Wow, I'm so glad I came. Wow, that was worth my time. Wow, I can't wait to come back. And so really thinking about when they leave on that drive home, what are they going to be thinking and saying? And that is going to go so much farther. And they'll be so eager to say yes when you invite them back.
Mm-hmm.
Now, listeners, we want to hear from you. Are there any in-person experiences you're dreaming about or even actively planning? Do you have any practical ideas that enhance the experience of an in-person event without breaking the budget? Email us at podcast@umcom.org, and we just might share your thoughts or tips on a future episode. And you can, of course, use that email, podcast@umcom.org, to send us any feedback or topic suggestions for the show. We always love hearing from you. As always, the easiest ways to support the show and help other church communicators like yourself find it are by sharing this episode with your friends and colleagues and by leaving a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever service you're listening to right now. And did you know that United Methodist Communications is celebrating 80 years of ministry? Your support ensures that the latest denominational news, dynamic stories, and informative articles will continue to connect our global community. Make a tax-deductible donation today at resourceumc.org/giveumcom. That's GIVEUMCOM. Thanks again for listening to the MyCom Church Marketing Podcast.